It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock, here from the beautiful studios of FreedomsPhoenix.com. Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, we have some of the crew up at the Axiom Conference up in Salt Lake City, and we're broadcast on, we got a couple of stations up there that have good taste. KNAK 540 AM and KHQN 1480 AM. And this is, a great opportunity because you get to meet a lot of the guys down there. And if you wanted to, you can go to the Axiom Conference. And the vendor area, that's free. You go in there to the vendor area, they got all kinds of goodies, including, Freedom's Phoenix. We got all kinds of videos that we've done, DVDs. We have some pass-out material, some information on our Freedom Summit that we do here in December. We have all kinds of goodies. And then they have a deal that you can get all 3 days for $50. That's half off of the regular door admission. You say, we're here for declaring our independence, and we want to get our discount. We want to declare our independence, and it doesn't even need a government form. And, oh, by the way, we get a discount. So you go to the Axiom Conference. This is at Salt Lake City Community College, the Larry H. Miller campus. There's 9750 South 300 West Sandy, Utah. 9750 South 300 West Sandy. Now, feel free to go ahead and you can call them. I'm going to give you a number. I'll give it out now, but we'll give it out later too. You can reserve, two tickets at $50 each. Okay, for $100 you get two for one on this. And these are the frontline guys. The Axiom Conference and We Are Change Utah. They've been leading the way. They got their chest pumped out, heavy duty up against the man, and people are paying attention across the nation, which is why there's so many people wanting to go to Salt Lake, including the guys from Phoenix here. They left early yesterday morning, get there in time last night to party with their friends. Let me give you the number now. I'll give it out later, too. 801-503-1153. 801-503-1153. And this week we have visiting with us, and tomorrow he's going to have his Constitution Preservation class here in Phoenix, is Michael Badnarik. Michael Badnarik was a 2004 Libertarian presidential nominee, and he's just St. Louis, Missouri conference that we had for 2010. He gave a speech, and it was called The Obituary of the Libertarian Party. He was like, oh, man, you guys better get it going on like these We Are Change guys. And We Are Change Arizona's up there. So it's, this is great. I mean, Salt Lake, I'm glad we have a really good presence there. And if you wanted to get some of the goodies from us, all the things that we're talking about, meeting some of the guys, you go to the Axiom Conference. Let them know you're there for declaring your independence. And they got all kinds of goodies for you. And that's over at the Salt Lake City Community College. Now, the first guy that they're going to hook me up with is Clint Richardson of We Are Change Utah. He's the one that's got it all going on. Clint, I got you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm more than wonderful. Get up close to the mic, man. Okay, now tell me, how did this come about? When did you start planning this program in Salt Lake?
Well, I'll tell you, we went to a conference in Ontario, California for Freedom Law School, and they had some of our speakers there. And we decided that, if this guy can do it, why can't we? To be honest, I'm doing this out of my pocket for the most part and hoping that I can recoup some of the sales. We're actually giving the tickets as cheap as we possibly can because you know, the goal of We Are Change is to educate, and we do not make a profit for anything we do up here. And so we just decided that we were going to do it. And, you know, I guess the real thing that people need to know is I'm nobody. You've never heard of me, and you probably won't in the future. But anybody can do this, and we need to start educating people in our own communities. We need to outreach to people and get these kind of speakers. These people aren't any different than anybody else. We just called them. We called them on the phone. We said, hey, can you come to our conference? We'll put you up in a hotel and feed you. And they said yes, and that's all it took.
So, of course they did, because you're the heart, the soul, the power, the center of the universe when it comes to somebody getting off their butt and actually doing something. You know, this is, I'll tell you what my experience is with Salt Lake. During the highlight, the big buildup in middle of 2007, during the Ron Paul Lovelution, there were activists in Salt Lake City. They were the ones that came up with the idea of using the back of all the old used billboard material that's up on the highway billboards. They're throwing them away. Heck, they charge them $5, $10 to throw them in the landfill because they don't degrade for decades. So what they did is you'll haul them off? You want them for free? Oh, yeah, we're using them for, Boy Scout tents. Yeah, that's it. That's what we're doing. So they just give them to us, and Salt Lake came up with the idea, and it exploded across the country as a great material for making all these freeway blogging sites. Signs. Then the next time Salt Lake comes to my attention was when you guys were there holding up your signs at the Tea Party rallies. Okay, go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, unfortunately, the Tea Parties have been, well, first of all, there's the Tea Party and the Tea Party Express, and they're quite different animals. We went, and because we knew that the Tea Party was originally started with the Ron Paul movement, and with some guys throwing over some boxes in Boston representing the, you know, the 9/11 Commission report. And so we went there and we held up our sign that said, just, question 9/11 and demand answers. And, boy, did they went and they asked the police to make us take our signs down. But fortunately, we have some constitutional sheriff's department up here, and we were able to say, well, we respect your offer, but we're going to stand our ground. Then the Tea Party actually had the nerve to have some of the people that were attending the Tea Party rally to stand in front of us with their flag so that our banner was blocked, but we didn't move. We even thought about moving in front of their speakers, but we stood our ground. We were respectful to law enforcement, and, you know, there's a video of it up there, you know, Utah We Are Change. I can't remember what it's called, but it's amazing. And we asked other We Are Changes to do it across the country because we're a unified group. And for anybody that doesn't even know we're here, we have people join We Are Change all the time and say, oh, my gosh, I didn't know you guys were here. Where did you come from? Well, we've only really been really active for the last 8 months, but in 8 months, we're up to 90 members.
You know, that's one thing that's different. A lot of people don't understand. They'll go, we have 10,000 members that you know, returned an email. I mean, you know, that's not the same thing as when you're talking with these We Are Change people, that average age or, you know, maybe mid-20s, that get up by inspiration and example of others that actually do something, okay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's why I'll go and I'll give speeches and so on, and they don't even understand what I mean when I say, I'll take five hardcore libertarian, no compromise activists to 10,000 of their Tea Party Express people. That don't mean nothing to me. And we'll go and kick butt. They did the searchlight thing south of Las Vegas out, you know, Harry Reid, they're going to do a big searchlight. We don't like Harry Reid, we're going to searchlight. And we owned that place. We had so many signs. We went and it was like, it was probably a couple dozen people that worked on it, and a dozen people went to put them up, and we worked with some of the activists in Vegas. But it was just a demonstration of how powerful individuals, just a few people, can be. This is powerful, powerful stuff. And there's a lot of things going on. I mean, like here, we have, if they go to freedomsphoenix.com, you know, you can see all of the stuff that we do. You know, all the things that we accomplish, all of the, and it's from the spirit of exactly why we are so supportive of what you're doing in Utah, because we see what you're doing in a place that you are not, supported by the local gentry.
No.
I mean, so tell me who your opposition is.
It's a tough nut to crack because we're in a fairly secluded city. I mean, you go any direction, you don't get to another major city for quite a while. So getting people here was the hardest part. But actually, the hardest part was getting anybody within the city to help us because, the Republican Party certainly didn't help us. The 912 group didn't help us. We're actually really disappointed. I practically had to threaten one of the local stations for them to get me on. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, you know, anybody that's listening to this, just coming out, I'm putting this on for free. We got a vendor hall that you can just walk through, talk to the Constitutional Party delegates. I got the Oath Keepers here. I got Freedom's Phoenix here, and I respect the heck out of you guys.
Hey, they're going to push the button on us. Hold on. Will you just sit right there? We'll go and let you finish your thought when we come back here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Clint Richardson.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Hey, Lunatic Fringe, I know you're out there, and you're in here, and you're in Utah. In Utah, at the Axiom Conference, we got a bunch of people. They got a long list of just the vendors. You know, we have a lot of vendors there that are making themselves available to the public, and it's free. So you go over to, let me look at this. It's a Salt Lake City Community College at the Larry H. Miller campus on South 300 West Sandy. And, you know, it's, there is an opportunity that a lot of people in the area don't have because Salt Lake City is so isolated from, really, that's the largest metropolitan area for a long ways. And, you know, when you have somebody out there advocating for freedom and a lot of people will come to make themselves available to share, it's a good time to take advantage of that opportunity. And we have, as our affiliates there, KNAK 540 AM in Delta, Utah. And in Spanish Fork, Provo out there is KHQN 1480 AM. You go in the Salt Lake and you get a lot of speakers on a lot of stuff. And you go to Axiom Conference, AXIOM Conference.com has all the speakers, all the goodies. Now, and they got, you know, and the tickets are cheaper for you guys. You go and you say, I declare my independence, $50 a piece, 3 days. Now, who we got on now is Jake Shannon. He's a libertarian candidate in Utah. Jake, what are you running for there, man? Jake, what are you running for in Utah?
I am running for the 3rd Congressional District for the U.S. House of Representatives.
And who is there an incumbent that you're running against?
Oh, yes, there's an incumbent.
And it is?
It's Jason Chaffetz. He is very, very popular and very slick. He kind of, I mean, I actually admire his ability to spew the rhetoric and be convincing and likable and affable. But when you look at his voting record, it's straight neoconservative. But he comes off as kind of a contrarian paleoconservative, but he's really a neoconservative.
Well, I mean, you know, define that, you know, and he is based on what?
Well, okay, so for those who kind of aren't nerds about this type of thing, a neoconservative are your typical GOP. They've taken over the GOP. They're former leftists, Trotskyites that have taken over the Republican Party, and they favor big government just like every other leftist group, but they just use conservative principles. Dick Cheney, George Bush. Now, the thing is that there's some telling tales. The first thing is usually they're very big supporters of the state of Israel. They're very big into, like, IPAC and you know, the protecting Israel. That's probably the big, easiest telling sign. But then there's a couple other things that you need to vet. One, they're always anti-civil liberties. So, for example, you know, they're always striking down things of, like, you know, gun ownership, but on the other side, like the decriminalization of drugs. And then the other thing that's real big is they're always pro-war. They're very interventionist. They're about empire building. They think they have to be the world's policemen. And so when you actually look at people's votes versus their rhetoric, you know, it's always, even George Bush, the rhetoric he used to get elected was libertarian rhetoric, a small L libertarian. But then once they get into power, then that's how you see, you know, the true colors come.
Well, how are you to be differentiated from them? I mean, you're out there as a libertarian going, oh, let me tell you what we stand for. And what do you say?
You know, we are for maximum freedom and minimum government. How's that for four words to sum it up?
Well, yeah, I'm for, you know, maximum freedom is no government, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, we stop shy of anarchy, but, you know, we believe there is a role for government in courts and in police and in military, but not Fannie and Freddie, not the Federal Reserve, not the IRS, you know, that kind of stuff. So libertarians very much favor small government. They are. So what Ralph Nader is to the Democrats, the libertarians are to the Republicans. They are very good at splitting the vote. They're the third largest political party in the United States. They've been around since 1971. So if people are interested, they can go to lp.org. So it's basically a way to express, you know, views against our burdensome tax system, to maximize civil liberties, that kind of thing.
Well, I'm hoping that we can get, you know, kind of clear on what it is that we're offering, because you have such a stranglehold on politics there by, I would imagine there would be one dominant party. It's probably the Republicans. I would imagine you have one dominant religion. It's probably Latter-day Saints. I would imagine you would have, you know, one dominant ideology, and it's going to be we rule you. So, yeah. You know, and, you know, what, like, we are change guys there and them hitting the streets and doing this stuff. What is it that you're doing? How are you getting your message out?
Well, you know, I'm a part of this conference. I'm speaking tomorrow. I've written a book called Anomaly, Revolutionary Knowledge in Everyday Life, and I've done kind of the a bunch of radio press and magazine interviews about it. And that's really why I'm here. The fact that I'm running for Congress and trying to make a difference, I mean, honestly, I have a master's degree in financial mathematics, and so the mathematician in me says, you know, my first act, if I'm elected, would be to demand a recount, because it's highly unlikely that I will get elected. But I wrote a book called Anomaly, and basically it's a treatise on mental self-defense, basically how to weed out the BS. And so as such, I treat quite a bit of weeding out conspiracy theory from conspiracy evidence and not being judgmental, not doing any of that stuff. And, you know, the shocking thing is I really come out on the side of a lot of what people are saying with regards to our government and how it really has lied to us and done numerous things to really abrogate our freedoms. And it's scary because a lot of it's still secret. And it's not secret in the sense that you can't find out. It's just that people are lazy.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, the work that's being done by different organizations and groups and individuals, it always comes down to individuals, no matter how many groups they say they belong to. And they're in Salt Lake. I would think after a decade that there has been some movement one way or the other in response to issues like 9/11, because a lot of all of this, the neoconish, as you described it, I mean, they got all the goodies they wanted. I mean, it just keeps bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger government, more and more intrusiveness, more and more in control, more and more repressing of the opposition. You know, it's like illegal to dissent now. It's, you know, I'm wondering what Salt Lake has done. Have they dug in their heels? Have they, you know, got deeper in their foxhole, piled up the sandbags further and say, no, we're for government, right or wrong, it's ours, and they put on their red, white, and blue cowboy hat, or what? Or are they starting to become more aware? Is there a differentiation between the generations? Are the young people starting to abandon this? Are they losing control? What's happening in Salt Lake?
Yeah, Salt Lake in Utah is a very interesting culture because, as you mentioned, it's dominantly Republican. As a matter of fact, the district I'm running in is the most Republican district in the entire country, not just the state, but the entire country. Yes, the LDS influence here is just incredible. It's really amazing, actually. But what I've found, because I moved here about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, about 30 seconds, so make your point.
From Southern California, sure, I'll get to it. That what I've found is that actually, and I'm not LDS, I'm not Mormon, but the underlying religion is libertarian. They have this idea of free agency, that you have to be free to make mistakes. And that is probably the most libertarian idea. It has nothing to do with religion in my mind, but it does for them. And so that gives me hope here.
Good. Make sure that you send us an MP3 of your speech that you give. Maybe we'll cut it up and use some goodies. So go all hardcore on me, man. I want to hear it.
I will.
All right. Jake Shannon running for Congress as a libertarian in Utah against the man. Against the man. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and more guests from Axiom Conference in Utah.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And I mean everybody. Everybody, everybody, everybody just stop and take a look around. What the heck? And I'll tell you one of the things, a guest that I'm very glad to have that, you know, I certainly want to do a full show with in the future is Professor Stephen Jones. That was a professor at BYU. Given some of the actual material from 9/11, he goes, guess what? It's got thermite in it. I mean, you know, just FYI, I just thought I'd share that with you. You know, somebody that knows something about this stuff, I go, I test it, it's got thermite. Oh, you're not allowed to say that. I got you, Professor Jones.
Hello, Ernest.
I mean, how far off am I? I mean, you know, it's like you said that.
No, that's right on. By the way, I recognize your voice. I listen to you quite often on the radio when I get a chance to listen to you down in San Pete County, Utah, is where I.
Oh, well, great.
From now and.
Well, then
enjoy
now you know
show.
That. Well, then get your butt on the show, man. We're going to be
here. I am.
Make sure that Jet and the guys there get your contact information, and we'll get you
okay.
on.
Okay.
Because
right,
this
we'll
is, we've had a lot of people from the beginning. We've been challenging this from, I mean, at the beginning of this whole 9/11 thing. I started doing radio in 03, and I tell the audience, I go, I guarantee you this. Whatever they're saying happened is not. That's not what happened. But what happened? I don't know. But whatever they're saying, that ain't it. Okay, so this is how did you come to even get interested in this? How was it that you got some of the material that you were able to test? And then tell me what happened after you tested it and published your results.
Okay, several questions there. Good ones. Let's start back in 2005 in the spring. I'd actually been nudged by several friends to look at 9/11. With a critical eye from a science point of view. And I just, you know, kind of put it off like, well, you know, I saw the towers come down on 9/11. That's probably all I need to know type of approach. So I was in the dark like everybody else. Then in April of 2005, I went to a conference, and this woman was speaking about preparedness, kind of an expert on preparedness, which I've been interested in. For some years. Anyway, you know, at the time I was just a good Republican shopper, like so many. Not anymore, by the way, but at the time. So anyway, she paused in her talk and she said, now if you think that those towers came down just because they were hit by planes, you have some major surprises ahead of you. And that really surprised me when she said that. And about half the audience was applauding. And I was among the half that was thinking and saying, well, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. But In the next couple of days, I got on my computer, and fortunately, I found WTC7.net. Jim Hoffman has become a good friend of mine. And, you know, what Jim did and his colleagues on this site is they put together data with references. And that's what I like, so I can check it out. It's not just, you know, speculation or whatever. No, these guys are referencing, and they're talking about World Trade Center 7, and they're talking about molten metal in the debris. Back then, that's about all we had, really, and the behavior of the towers, the rapidity at which they came down, that's about all we had at the time. But I had never seen the collapse of World Trade Center 7 before. And the first time I saw that, I thought, man, this is really strange. This was not hit by a plane. It fell 7 hours after the second tower fell. And, you know, why does it come straight down like that? I pulled up my stopwatch and timed it. 6.5 seconds. That's just over a free fall. I calculated if you drop a steely, you know, a steel ball off the roof, it would take 6 seconds. So, I mean, it's 6.5 seconds.
Well, this is of importance to you because, yeah. As I recall, aren't you a physics professor?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're going,
that's right.
Hey, man, it's called math.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, this is the sort of thing that I teach the students. I say, you know, to get something to fall at free fall acceleration like that requires mass to be out of the way. There can't be anything in the way if it's falling at free fall. And, you know, this point has continued on World Trade Center 7 and its acceleration. Let me just bring you up to 2008, August. So NIST comes out with their preliminary report.
Now tell us who NIST is real quick.
Okay, right. NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's a federally funded laboratory under the Department of Commerce. So they were charged by Congress to explain the collapse of the towers and Building 7. So they come up with it, finally, with their preliminary report on Building 7. It's been delayed for about 3 years. Finally, they come up with this preliminary report, and right there in the preliminary report, it says, we're assuming that the descent of Building 7 was at constant speed. I just about died, you know, gag. This is not what the data shows at all. Did these guys ever look at the data? I mean, I was just, of course, this is what got me into this research, is Building 7. I knew better than constant speed, and here's a national lab, for heaven's sakes. And so they had a forum where you could contact them by email. But the forum was publicized on the Internet, see? So people are watching and people are writing in by email. So I write to them. And my main question was about Building 7. I said, look, here on page 40 of your preliminary report, I told them where it was, you say, assuming constant speed. That is totally off the wall. I didn't use that terminology. I just said, this appears to be incorrect, you know. And I said, looking at the data as I've done and others, the building accelerates. And furthermore, it's near free fall. Would you please correct your report? I mean, it needs to be corrected on this point. And then I mentioned some other points. But that question was read publicly. They hemmed and hawed, frankly. The one guy, Shyam Sundar, he's the chief of the groups studying Building 7 for this report for NIST. Anyway, Dr. Sundar says, well, it can't be free fall because that would mean there's nothing in the way. And I mean, this is a huge building. It's got hundreds of thousands of tons of concrete like that. And so he said, and then this other guy, John Gross, hemmed and hawed a bit too. And then this third fellow, I don't know his name, he stepped in and he says, look, we better just check this out. We'll just check it out. And then we'll see if it needs correcting, which it did. So now comes the final report. The final report, they have a plot of velocity versus time. Now, this I taught for over 21 years at BYU, Brigham Young University. Huh? Velocity versus time, and sure enough, it's a straight line, which means constant acceleration, and the fit to the straight line. Now, there's some white hats at NIST. The fit to the straight line was 32.2 feet per second squared, 9.8 meters per second squared. Now, if you've studied physics at all, you know that means G. That means free fall. No, nothing in the way, not just close to free fall, it's free fall. For over 100 feet, that roof fell with nothing in the way. Now, this is a huge building. So, of course,
detonation. You blew out the lower floors. But you know, we only got a couple of minutes left, and I want to get unless they got you for the next segment, which is why you got to come back on the show. See, you got to come back on the show. And the one thing I want to know is, how did you get a sample of the metal to test whether there was thermite residue?
All right, I got
30 seconds. Go to it. Get right to it.
Oh boy. There's a friend, became a friend at, what's the name of that college in New York State? Potsdam, Clarkson University. And he was charged to put together a monument. They sent him steel from the World Trade Center. He sent me some of that steel. And also he sent me a sample of this impacted dust in the steel. And others then also sent me dust that they'd collected it, like...
Swept it off their car or porch or whatever, and then you tested it. Yeah. What did you find?
We found, among other things, but the most important feature characteristic was the red gray chips that when we tested these using a differential scanning calorimeter, very sophisticated instrument, we found that they blow up. In the words of my colleague, Jeff Farrow.
So they were undetonated thermite.
Explosive material. Nanothermite, actually.
Well, this is, and it had, it reverberated when you did that. And then Brigham Young said, your services are no longer required, or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's quite a story, too.
Yes, but you're too slow telling it. So you got to come back. They'll get your information, Dr. Jones, and we'll have you back on the show. Thanks for coming on. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
To declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and sitting in studio is 2004 presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party, Michael Badnarik. He's here this weekend giving his Constitution preservation class tomorrow, so he's hanging out just listening and seeing what's up. Because we got, and I tell you another little secret that's going on here. I don't want to talk to him because they're doing all kinds of other stuff. I'm busy. Al Jazeera is like, I don't know, 20 yards from me in the workshop, talking to some of the other activists. They're here covering the SB 1070 immigration things. And what's the truth? Somebody tell us the truth. What's the truth? It's national ID. That's what the truth is. So they're here talking to some of the activists and doing that. And I said, I ain't got time. Because I got the opportunity to talk to Kirk Pearson. He's running for Congress in Utah up there in the northern part. Got a little bit going into Salt Lake City. What district is that? Is that the first district?
Yeah, the first district.
First district in Utah. And you have Rob Bishop you run against, right?
Correct.
And is he good guy, bad guy? I mean, he's obviously a bad guy. He's evil. And you're running for the Constitution Party, right?
Correct, yes.
Well, tell us about the Constitution Party there. You would think Constitution and, Latter-day Saints, they'd be all buddies.
Well, I don't know about that. The Constitution Party's third largest party in the country, fastest growing, and... basically, we believe that we need to go back and follow that Constitution. It, we became the greatest country in the world almost overnight from following that Constitution. And lately, in the last 20, 40, 60 years, we've been getting further and further away from that, turning into a socialist European-type government. And the further we get away from that, the worse, that our country is becoming and the more tyranny we have.
Oh, heck, well, then we got to vote Republican then, right? Well, if we vote Republican, then that'll take care of all this collectivism, statism, going around spending my money somewhere else thing, right? We go Republican, that'll do it, right?
Yeah, well, that's what everybody believes. We just got to get another good Republican in there, and that'll fix the problem.
Yeah, I never heard that before. So now we have this going back and forth and back, and it's almost like, I mean, after you go through enough election cycles where you're paying attention. I'm 49 years old. I started paying attention in my mid-late 20s in 88, and I'm going, I keep seeing the same thing over and over. It's the Democrats' fault. No. This time it's the Republicans' fault. No. It's the Democrats' fault. No. And you go up high enough on the left side and the right side of the pyramid, you get to the top, you find it's the same people controlling the whole thing. And I'm going, okay, maybe we can try something else. Let's do third part. And then you find out, well, you're still in the system. So I'm just wondering, what is it that you're offering? Let's say you got elected. Kurt Pearson, he's the man. They get out, they're going, we're going to vote for Kurt. And we go out and we get Kurt in, and you're still in that system. What are you going to do different? You're going to save us. What are you going to do?
I want to do I think that one of the things we need to do is we need to start playing offense instead of defense. I want to put forth legislation every day that they have to stop me instead of me trying to stop them. I think that we need to put Congress on the same pay scale as the average American worker, which is around $41,000 instead of the $175,000 they get now, and then tie their scale to the American worker scale. So if Americans start making more money, Congress would start making more money. I think then maybe they'd be a little more concerned about our economy instead of a global economy.
You know, the one I want to share this one thought with you. That's been something that a lot of the anarchists that I've interviewed before have said. They go, you know, just because you get a little bit more freedom, you know, free range chickens, you know, the end, they're still in the chicken McNugget box, okay? So it's kind of like, you know, it's more prosperous and you get, and the more free you have a society, but still under some government, you become enormously prosperous, which just provides more resources for the government to get bigger to screw with the rest of the planet. So it's like we're a victim of our own success as long as we have any kind of government with the right to our wealth. I mean, the right to our income, the right to our property. I mean, even in the Constitution, it says they got eminent domain, which means what? They're eminent domain. I mean, you know, of all my domains. So I'm going, wow, and the difference is what? Why would it be different to have someone in the system that's still advocating for a system? You're just going to make it more difficult or slow them down a little bit. Or, I mean, what is fundamentally changed? I'm trying to come to grips with this. I've been doing this a long time, and I'm really looking for an answer. And you still see our Constitution and this system as salvageable? I mean, are we gonna get the welder out on the Titanic? I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, I do believe we need we do need some control in government, a government system, but it's got to be very limited to what our founding fathers had given us.
They gave us eminent domain and regulation of commerce and taxation. I don't know if I was a king, I don't know how much more I'd want. so this is, when you say limits, where's your limit? Because they try to equate the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution, and it's not really even, they weren't even connected. They had Articles of Confederation between them, but the Declaration of Independence says we're not going to tell you what kind of government you're going to get, but we just can tell you when you create a government, how you can tell when it's bad. When it's not defending individual rights, it's bad. Alter, right. Abolish. Alter, abolish. Alter, abolish, like we're doing right now. So I'm going, okay, so I'm wondering how bad does it have to get before we alter or abolish? And I don't mean alter by changing the guys that, you know, get to wear the shiny badge. I'm talking about, you know, some fundamental changes. I mean, is there any fundamental change? Are we, you know, I mean, I'm talking drastic, like allowing secession. You know, let Montana go off. You know, heck, Utah, you know, begging to come into, you know, the Union and changing all their laws so that they could be in the Union. That was the first mistake, you know. And then we got the Republic of Texas. I mean, they're just like, oh, yeah, baby, you just give us an excuse and we're so out of here. So I'm just, would you accept a secession movement from one of the 50 states?
Oh, yeah, I think that we lost a great deal of that during Abraham Lincoln with the Civil War. It used to be we would say the United States of America are at war, and now we say the United States of America is at war. We used to have 50 independent countries, and that's, you know, we need to get the power back to the states and out of the federal government so that you got 50 different people, different states out there, and one state tries something. If it works well, the other states can jump on board if they want to, but, you know, where the government, federal government's trying to control everything, now we've just got chaos, and we've got control over what they want, not what we the people want.
You know, a lot of times we'll have these issues come up, like here in Arizona, the big hoopla going on right now, to the point that we got, you know, Fern Press here, is that it's this idea, can Arizona defend its border with a foreign country? Well, the United States says, no, you can't. That's us. Well, then do it. Well, we're not doing it. Well, we want to do it. Then do it. And then they go back and forth and back and forth, and they get exactly what they wanted, an argument over immigration. But the legislation that they created to do this had nothing to do with that. It was all about everybody's got to have papers, and we'll see whether you can be here or not. It's papers, please. This is all about a national ID, and they are able to, and I've talked to people on the left and the right, to people that want amnesty and open borders and all this kind of, and the people that want to close it down, and they think that's the issue. And I'm asking you as a congressman, and you get up, I mean, you're in Congress, and you're like, man, I want to close the border, I want to regulate the border, I want to whatever the border. Are you willing to be able to do that? Because you're going to have to go up to somebody. I don't know. You're walking around while Brown get on the ground, Holmes, and you got to check what? I mean, you know, we got a fingerprint database. We're going to do the Gattaca thing where they give a little bit of blood. Are we going to check papers and so on? I mean, how far are you willing to go to check immigration, or do you even care about it?
I've thought about that a lot too, and I'm concerned about the, I mean, you know, even our airports, you go fly on a plane now and you've got more documents to show than you would in any other country in the world. I had a foreign exchange student stay with us from Germany this last year, and she was amazed by all the documentation and security she had to go through here versus in Germany. So, yeah, I mean, they've got it controlled to where we've got to show our papers just to get from here to there and prove who we are.
Well, how else are you going to do it? I mean, you know, that's kind of the point that they've been drumming up. This, see, the problems that I have is they're going, well, they're doing something bad. I mean, they're making use of our tax money for education and roads and the libraries and the hospitals and all this kind of, they never even address the welfare state. It doesn't even come up. It's like, no, it's okay for somebody from Appalachia or Kentucky or something to move to Arizona to steal my money. That's okay. But if they're from Sonora, that's bad. And I'm like, and the difference is what? You're an American. I'm going, wow. They never want to address the real problem. And if you go to Congress, man, I'm telling you, I want some real problems addressed. You know what it is? It's taking my money. Taking my money. Stop taking my money. Well, I tell you what, go ahead and you got a little bit here, Kurt. Go ahead and give out a web page or some contact information so people can look you up.
It's Kirk, K-I-R-K, the number 4, Congress.com. KirkForCongress.com.
K-I-R-K, the number 4, Congress.com, right?
Correct, yes.
K-I-R-K, the number 4, Congress.com. Kirk Pearson, he's running in the 1st Congressional District in Utah against Rob Bishop, an incumbent. That's a bad enough right there. A representative of the Constitution Party.
Yeah,
thanks for coming on, Kurt. I appreciate it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit. You guys stay right there. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news.